Tonight we're reading from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 15. Yanhina vyatayantyete purusham purusharshrabha samadukha sukham dhiram somritatvaya kalpate. So this has a very deep meaning. It is translated as, "O best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress, and is steady, is certainly eligible for liberation." So we'll be talking about these points, that how we respond to happiness and distress is an important consideration. In fact, it's so important that it says here that this is considered to be a standard of one's eligibility to be liberated from this world. In the purport, Prabhupada starts out by saying, "Anyone who is steady in his determination for an advanced stage of spiritual realization and can tolerate the onslaughts of distress and happiness is certainly a person eligible for liberation." Someone has to be determined to make progress, to make advancement, and we'll talk about what that means. Srila Prabhupada gave a lecture on this verse in London one year. Back in 1973. And he says that here Arjuna is addressed by Krishna. Best among men. Pusharshba. Nowadays, you have to be sensitive to both genders. So, one of my godbrothers who translated the Bhagavad Gita, he translated this, "O best among persons," not "O best among men." Because the ladies will say, "What do you mean, best among men?" That's only half the human race. The Bhagavad Gita is for everybody. So he was sensitive to this. And he translated this, "O best among persons." But it means mankind. Best of the mankind. Of course, that's another word that has this gender-specific. But it's interesting. Prabhupada says, why does Krishna consider Arjuna best of persons or best of mankind? And the answer is, he's directly the friend of Krishna. And according to Srila Prabhupada, nobody can be better as a person than someone who's close to Krishna. So then, there's a problem that the best of men, why should he be distressed? He's just presented to Krishna his distress. A few verses before, he says, "Karpanyo dosha pahata swabhav." I'm like a miser. I'm distressed. I can't execute my duty. Karpanyo dosha pahata swabhava prachami tvam. Krishna, you tell me what is wrong. Tell me what's best for me. My mind is disturbed because I'm seeing all these people with whom I have to fight on the battlefield. They're my family members. I don't want to kill them. Even though it's my duty to fight, these family members were not nice persons. They were quite treacherous. And they had taken control of the kingdom, so Arjuna was supposed to fight. But Prabhupada is saying here, Arjuna should discharge his duties. And then he says, what are his duties? Of course they're to fight, but he goes beyond that. He says, the duty is to become immortal. This is the duty. Why does he say that? Because Arjuna is turning to Krishna for some instruction. And Krishna is telling him, you're a spirit soul. He gives some explanations of immortality. And Prabhupada is calling a lot of attention to this. Because in this verse, the word for immortal is used, amrita. This word is a Sanskrit word. Mrita means death, and amrita means no death. This applies to the soul. The soul is never killed. The soul never dies. The body is born, and the body can be killed. The body dies. But not the soul. The living entity, the soul is different from the body. And that living entity is immortal. So this is explained a bit in the lecture by Prabhupada. I'll touch on some of these points. Just to give you the idea of how important Bhagavad Gita is. Nowadays, though, Prabhupada noted it that nowadays, you know, you have modern scientists who think that nobody can stop death. Who can become immortal? There's no possibility of becoming immortal. Everybody dies. Or they say, well, maybe by science we'll be able to stop death. We'll figure out a way by studying the atoms and the genes. But here Krishna is giving a formula to Arjuna. Here's how you become immortal. You become callous about the happiness and distress of this world and do your duty. This is a qualification. This is your eligibility for immortality. Don't be distressed. Don't be disturbed by happiness and distress. Sometimes people think, well, I can't execute Krishna consciousness because there's so many inconveniences. You're supposed to get up early in the morning. You're not supposed to eat meat or fish or eggs. You're not supposed to engage in illicit sexual activity, not become intoxicated. And people who are accustomed to these things, they find that inconvenient to give them up. So then they're not eligible for immortality if they can't execute the duties of Krishna consciousness. People have just accepted it that we can't become immortal. We're going to die, so we might as well enjoy life while we can. And they become entangled in this life, in the activities of this world. And then they have to accept birth and death. They have desires to fulfill. They think that their happiness rests in pursuing activities in this world. They get entangled in the laws of karma. They want some material benefit. That's why they're acting in this world. And then they don't understand spiritual life. They think maybe spiritual life means something like you can do some magic. There was a person in India who claimed to produce gold in his hand. Sometimes he just took it out of his sleeve. Or maybe he had that power. Maybe he had a mystic power where he could produce something. And people thought, oh, this is really spiritual, you know, because it's beyond what ordinary people can do. Or they think, like sometimes in the Christian religion, they think that spiritual means that you can cure somebody's disease. You can heal a person by spiritual powers. So people want to see this kind of magic, you could say, huh? Miracles. I guess this started with Jesus. He performed miracles, and people think somehow that's spiritualism. But spiritual life, Prabhupada said, means to become immortal, not just some magic in this life. So one who is practiced to see happiness and distress in the same way. He doesn't become disturbed by the so-called happiness and distress that comes to him. He's not elated when there's happiness, and he's not disturbed when there's distress. He's undisturbed. Then he's said to have this qualification to become immortal. And Krishna, you know, underlines that this is the desired result of spiritual life. We're not really taking birth and dying. The living entity doesn't do that. It's the body. The problem comes when you have a body that's subject to birth. Of course, that body dies, but the living entity is immortal. Najayate, namriyate. Krishna says, najayate, no birth. Namriyate, no death. But the modern civilization doesn't know this. Hardly anybody that you know will be able to state, yes, there's no birth and death for the soul. No birth and death for the living entity. But for a Krishna conscious person like Srila Prabhupada, this is the basic understanding of life. And to be immortal, it means also you're going to have a life full of happiness and knowledge. It's not just you're going to be an angel in the sky, or you're going to be merged into an eternal light. Immortality means Satchid Ananda. There's pleasure in spiritual life. There's joyfulness. There's knowledge. And that comes in connection with Krishna, because Krishna is this way. Krishna is Satchid Ananda. And he's speaking the Bhagavad Gita, telling us that we are like this also. So we have to be careful not to take so-called spiritual knowledge from an ordinary person. We should take it from someone who's perfect, whose senses are perfect. Krishna has perfect, complete knowledge. He's not some ordinary person. There's so many philosophers who will try to tell you some spiritual knowledge. Scientists get into it. So many people, they want to talk about the question of immortality. So we have to find out from someone who is taking knowledge from Krishna. You won't find out so easily by going like to a university. There are very few departments of the university that are teaching you to become immortal. I have personal experience. I was at university in Minnesota. By the way, Minnesota is a place where a lot of Slovenian people went in the 1800s. The Slovenes went by boat to America to farm. There was a lot of rich farming land, and they went to Minnesota, this place. It's in central U.S. on the northern border. And the town I grew up in was named after a Slovenian priest. So, there in Minnesota, I met the devotees, and I was so impressed by this knowledge about from the Bhagavad Gita. I learned one idea that was very influential, that Krishna says you should be satisfied with the happiness that comes to you of its own accord. Don't endeavor on your own to try to find happiness. Just automatically there's going to be some happiness that comes to you. And that's true of distress also. There's also going to be some distress. But be satisfied with what's coming to you. Don't, you know, I was being encouraged. I was 20 years old, and you know, there's all kinds of pressure on a young person. You know, you have to get into the system now, because the system is the way that you're going to find happiness. You got to fit into the establishment, find a position, work, join the rat race. And that's how you'll be happy, because you'll get some money and you can spend it however you want to. This is what people take for happiness. But Krishna explains this idea that of its own accord, happiness is coming to you. Same with distress. So just accept these things, just like you accept the winter and the summer. Don't be disturbed. In this life, you don't get only happiness. You don't get only distress. There's a mixture of happiness and distress. So you should just tolerate these things, whatever life gives you. But people get all wrapped up in these things. You know, it's winter now, so people maybe say, well, I wish at least it would be sunny, or I wish it'd be a little warmer, or maybe I'll go, you know, someplace where it's warm. At least we need the heaters on. We have to make sure the furnace is running. And in the summer, hey, where's the air conditioning? Let's go to the beach, you know, let's. So they're always adjusting. In the winter, it's a little cold. So Prabhupada said, bring the electric heater immediately. Or if it's too hot, bring the fan, bring the cooler. Especially in India, they need the fans. They have a cold winter, but it only lasts 2 months in India. But Prabhupada says they should be thinking, instead of thinking, how can I adjust? How can I adjust to the heat and cold, the happiness and distress? How can I adjust to that? They should be thinking, why are these disturbances happening to me? I don't want them. So what's the ultimate solution? How can I get out of this situation completely so I don't subject myself to this duality, this happiness and distress in this world? And the answer is you become immortal. You go to a place where life is eternal, and you don't have a body that takes birth. You have a spiritual body. So if you make that the mission of your life, then you are going to avoid completely having to face happiness in distress. And if you don't make that the mission of your life, then you're going to try to adjust all the time to it. So this is the kind of nectar that you find in the Bhagavad Gita. This is considered nectar, amrita. It has to do with something that's immortal, not this world of death and birth. And this is considered the goal of life. So the devotees like Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya, this picture's here and here. Lord Chaitanya wanted to distribute this knowledge of how to become immortal by serving Krishna. And he just didn't consider whether a person was fit or unfit. He was so magnanimous. He didn't discriminate that, you know, only a certain person who took birth as a Brahmin can have this knowledge. Only a person who is very sincere, who's asking for this kind of knowledge, he can have it. No, Lord Chaitanya gave it to people who didn't ask for it. So Srila Prabhupada also, he wanted everybody to take Bhagavad Gita, to study Bhagavad Gita, to have a book, have a Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada asked all his followers to make sure that people learn about this goal of life. So the devotees make sacrifices to give people these books. That's why we have these books hanging from the ceiling today, Bhagavad Gita, big Bhagavad Gitas, to remind us that now is a good time to give people books because they're all Christmas shopping. So the devotees are going out and they're, some of them are even tolerating the cold weather for a few hours to give out books. And some devotees are doing this not just this month, but they're doing it year round. They sacrifice everything else and they just spend their life month after month giving people books. Sometimes they have to meet 100 people before they find 10 people that are willing to take a book. There's some negativity, you know, people don't know when they get a book. What is it? Oh, it's about religion. I don't care about that. I'm not an inquisitive person. I don't read about these things. So you have to meet a lot of people before you can find someone was interested, unless you're like Vishvakirti. Vishvakirti would give out 50 books a day sometimes. And the devotees do this not by pressuring people, but by showing them some positive energy, helping people. Because they feel connected to Krishna. The devotees feel, I'm connected to Krishna. So I should be enthusiastic about connecting other people So let me be positive with the person. Let me help the person. Not pressure him. You know, you have to take a book. And then they become really connected. Krishna really appreciates devotees who try to spread the knowledge of Krishna consciousness. This month in London, one of my friends from Russia, who has spent a lot of time distributing books to people, is posting on Facebook. He's gotten a film degree, a degree in filmmaking. And so along with giving people books, and he gives them a card with the Hare Krishna mantra written on it. You know, it's an invitation to the temple. And then he says, "I want to film you now." And a person thinks, "Wow, I'm going to be filmed. Oh, great. What do I do?" And he said, "You just chant this mantra. Can you read this mantra out loud?" So, you know, he's stopping so many people, sometimes whole groups of people, six people, maybe sitting at a, there was a little video of six girls from Germany sitting at a table drinking. And, you know, they all chant together. There was one man from Brazil, another man from Czech, young people, a lot of young, he gets a lot of young people to do this. And he even got Santa Claus. I was going to show you the video, but we didn't get it together. But Santa Claus, you know, some of these people, they don't know how to pronounce the words. So Santa Claus was saying, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare." So they start, and that way they get a good start in spiritual life. They hear the spiritual sound, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And they take a book. They've got a big campaign going on in London. They want to distribute 100,000 books this month. And they're up to 50,000 now. Maybe they'll do it. That's more books than they did last year during the whole month. By setting themselves a big goal and getting many devotees involved, they're going to maybe reach 100,000. We'll see. Maybe you have some questions you'd like to ask. I can stop here. Yes, sir.
Prabhupada said that it's an art to sell many books, but not to agitate people. So how can this be done? Yes, you have some tips, because we had some problems in this traveling Sankirtan. People got agitated, called the police and stuff. If you have any advice, how to...
How can you distribute books without agitating people like Srila Prabhupada wanted? He said if they get agitated and they go away, then that's not good. Well, that would be a case where maybe you're putting too much pressure. In the beginning, you know, you in the 70s when the devotees started to do this, you know, you don't maybe feel comfortable going out on the street and talking to people you don't know and trying to interest them in a book. And you might be nervous. And you might want to succeed in selling a book. And therefore you might put the wrong kind of pressure on people. They might not want to be pressured. But on the other hand, a lot of them are agitated anyway. Maybe more agitated than the devotee. Because... You know, the life is agitating. If you're not peaceful in your heart, life can be a very agitating thing. So somehow the peacefulness that comes with spiritual life can be, if that can be extended to people, you can encourage people, you know, you can find peace within if you look at this book. And people may believe that, okay, I'd like to see it. I've been looking for peace. I'd like to, but you know better than me. You're out on the street. And not only that, you're in the public eye, sometimes juggling. You're like, to, you know how to deal with people. But people like to say no. It's a fact. They like, they're kind of conditioned to say no. When people are outside in public, you know, they're going about their business and they're thinking, life is meant for my enjoyment. I'm the controller. I'm meant to control the resources that are available to me. I'm, you know, the shops are all set up to make the person think, you know, he can enjoy, she can enjoy. The senses are there to be enjoyed. I can buy things to eat. There's so many shops. The tongue is being engaged by those who are looking for some profit. They have so many restaurants to encourage you to spend your money to enjoy the tongue, or drinking, intoxication, liquor, or, you know, smelling. You can go to the perfume department or the cologne department, find nice things for the nose and the ears. There's music to buy. And you know, people are just looking and trying to find their identity in all these things. Trying to create an identity out of what is available to them in this world. And that's agitating. We're all accepting, you know, false identities, temporary identities. That's agitating to the soul. The soul wants to feel the permanent identity that he has in connection with Krishna. So until they get that, they're going to be agitated. Any other questions? Here.
Hare Krishna. I want to ask you, if life can become boring, if you become the same in happiness and in distress?
Yeah, that's a good question. If you're always situated in the same attitude toward happiness and stress, isn't that a little boring? Where's the variety? Variety is the spice of life. And you know, the philosophy is, well, okay, there's happiness now. And then there's some distress, and I can also enjoy the distress. Like the songwriters, they sing so many songs about losing the happiness. That happiness between a boy and a girl. It's over now. It's over now. And so they try to enjoy the feeling of loss of happiness. And then when that becomes boring, then they gear up for trying again to taste some more happiness. And then they get some more happiness, and then it goes back and forth. And there's an unlimited range of happiness and distress available to you and to me and to everybody. This can go on forever. Tasting this happiness and that distress and then this happiness and another kind of distress. It can go on for millions of lifetimes. But there's another choice we have, another range of activity on the spiritual level, which has variety. As I said, immortality includes pleasure and knowledge, so it's not like it's a void, just nothing there. If you're equal in happiness and distress, it doesn't mean, oh, now everything is void, there's nothing to do, there's no variety. In spiritual life, there's a lot of variety, and there's a lot of personality, and there's a lot of activity, and there's a lot to talk about. And there's music and food and dancing. But the center is Krishna. The idea is to satisfy Krishna. So that's not boring, trying to satisfy the person who is the object of love. We're all looking for a way to love someone, and if the object of love is Krishna, and we're trying to satisfy Krishna, that's more exciting than just a temporary love in this world. Okay, I'll stop there. I'd like to extend, as you did, Prema Gopi, I'd like to extend appreciation to Jagat Prashu for leading the kirtan. It was really nice. Some of you don't know. I happen to know he plays professionally in an orchestra. And he's a very good musician. Now we're going to have another kirtan. Kirtan means chanting. There's three parts to kirtan. There's rhythm with the drums and the kartals. Tala. Tala means rhythm. Kartals means hand rhythm. You play the cymbals. And the drummer is keeping the rhythm. That's the tal. Then there's the melody. Raga, that's called. So you have rhythm and melody. And then the last component is bhava, your feeling. So you have to bring feeling to the kirtan. That's kirtan. Okay, I'll stop. Thank you. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.